now to turn to our program, The Future of Epidemiology. We've had a program similar to this, but with different speakers for the last, 4 years here at APHA. Today, our first speaker will be Dr. Calvin Wilson, who comes all the way from across town. we're very grateful. He's going to be talking about shifting patterns of morbidity and mortality in the developing world. He's been involved in international community and medical development projects for almost 20 years. Has multiple projects going on in Africa right now. He's won numerous awards. And without any more ado, Dr. Wilson.
Well, thank you all very much. I'm pleased to be here. I do, in addition to the usual disclosures, I do have one additional disclosure to make, which is I'm primarily a clinician. I'm not an epidemiologist, although in my several decades of work in global health, I have become a converted public health worker, I guess one would have to say, recognizing the critical importance of public health in global health and how it informs the clinical activities. What I'd like to do with you today in the short 20 minutes is go over with you some of the past and current trends in morbidity and mortality around the world with a focus especially in the developing world, talk about some of the transitions taking place and some of what I think we can see as the determinants of these transitions, as well as then get into what I'm primarily involved in, which is looking at what we can do about it, how we can propose some strategies to help deal with these changes. Just for definition, I think many of us may have struggled with these terms, developing, developed, middle income, and whatever. Frankly, I don't like it because, one, it focuses primarily on the economic aspects of it. And I think it's really the World Bank that's responsible for this. I prefer to think of development more in terms of system development or human development. But at this point, I'm going to use the term developing and developed countries based on the gross national index, primarily because that's the most common term still in use. And rather than confuse the picture, I'll just stick with what's being used. Now, here is just a very rough snapshot of mortality, death, around the world due to various different major issues or conditions in various countries. Starting with our own, as perhaps the primordial example of a developed country, all the way down to Nigeria, which is very much still in development. And you can see that the causes of death do vary significantly, and you can almost see, you can almost draw some lines on this relating to level of national income, of per capita income. All the way from the USA to Jordan and Kazakhstan, which would be considered in-between countries or high middle-income countries, all the way to the poorer countries in the world. you notice that perhaps some of the figures may be a little bit suspect. I find it hard to believe that there's only 7% death from injuries in Nigeria, and that's actually a problem that we have in getting statistics from some parts of the world. And the same thing is true of the incidence of diabetes, for instance, in countries like Jordan or Kazakhstan. That just means they haven't found them all. this is basically what we're looking at. If you group countries into the broad categories of high income versus low income, you can see the general trends here that the cardiovascular chronic diseases are the major problem in high-income countries, and that in the low-income countries, obviously, the communicable and preventable diseases, which, by the way, is a huge area that includes infectious disease, perinatal death, vaccine-preventable deaths, all of the things that are part of development. The thing that I would like to focus on, though, is notice the incidence of cardiovascular disease, cancer, chronic respiratory disease, and even diabetes in the so-called low-income countries. It's a lot higher than most people would generally consider. And this is one of the major things I'm going to be talking about today. Now, one other snapshot of a changing epidemiology has to do with life expectancy. By the way, you'll notice I've got several slides here from Dr. Laporte, who's our next speaker, for which I'm very grateful. I've learned a lot from him over the years. You notice that the general trend in life expectancy is gradually upward, and that although there is some difference between the developing and the developed worlds, it is increasing in both sectors. If you take just an example of Egypt as a one of the developing countries, you notice that that back in 1945, about a little over 50 years ago, 60 years ago, there was a huge gap in life expectancy. But that is gradually closing to the point where right now there's only a 5-year gap in life expectancy. This is just an example, and you could find this same tendency in many, many countries around the world. This covers a lot of ground. When we see life expectancy rising like this, that reflects changes in public health policy, environment, health care, health access, and all kinds of things involved in that, which we don't have time to go into in 20 minutes. Now, basically, the general term for all of this that's been bandied about for many, many years is epidemiologic transition. And it's basically a shift in the pattern from one pattern to another. And in particular, what it's been come to represent in epidemiology is a transition from the so-called diseases of the developing world to those of the developed world, or a shift especially from infectious disease to chronic disease. Now, the World Health Organization, in its wisdom, has coined the term non-communicable diseases. I don't particularly like it because I think it's kind of it's a little too nebulous. But you'll often see this term to distinguish problems from communicable diseases or infectious diseases. Abdel Omran has written extensively about this. Again, it's fascinating writing. Some of what he proposed many years ago has actually come true. Some of the things he's proposed has not come true, but it's also very, very interesting reading. And again, from Dr. Laporte, you notice just the general trends here. As infectious diseases decrease over time, non-communicable diseases or chronic diseases gradually increase over time. This is epidemiologic transition. The one thing that we will focus on to some extent is you notice the line, the point at which these two lines cross. This is the point at which many developing countries are at this very point in time. The primary chronic diseases that we're talking about are the big five here. There's others that you can add to that. Some people would add asthma to that because, interestingly enough, asthma is, some people group that under chronic respiratory disease, but asthma is specifically very much on the rise, both in terms of morbidity and mortality in many developing countries. Okay, again, another graphic representation of this. As infectious disease goes down, dating back to the 1900s, other diseases begin to rise, the most significant of which is heart disease. You notice cancer has risen significantly as well, although some of the other causes of death seem to be remaining relatively static, with the exception of perinatal disease early childhood disease, which seems to be going down. Now, if we just look at infectious versus heart disease in a variety of grouped countries, this is from WHO data, the top two, established market economies and former Soviet socialist republics, might be grouped together into the higher income countries, especially the established market economies, whereas some of the others are either middle income countries or very poor countries still very much in development. You notice that across the board, between including both men and women, there is only one region of the world where infectious and parasitic diseases are currently, this goes back to 1990, so it's actually a little bit old. In 1990, there's only one part of the world where there was more infectious and parasitic disease than cardiovascular disease, and that was in sub-Saharan Africa. In every other part of the world, the chronic diseases were much more frequent as causes of death in adults in their productive years of life. another way of looking at this is in just total gross figures. If you take the total death rate, which is the top figure, and just sort of mentally calculate the percentage of deaths from non-communicable diseases, you notice that across the world, it accounts for about 2/3 of all deaths. But in low-income countries, it still is at least half of all accounted deaths, and huge disability life years lost in that. Looking at projections now, what's expected for the future? Remember that these were projections made in 1990, but I think they're still running pretty close to true. The percentage of increases are less noted in the richer countries than in the poorer countries. You notice sub-Saharan Africa, by within the next 10 years, we can anticipate at least an over 100% increase in the incidence of cardiovascular disease. grouping these a little bit, this gives you a little bit clearer picture of that increase. And even greater in women than in men. Women are going to bear more and more of the burden of chronic diseases. Just looking at one other chronic disease, cancer. I found this interesting. This is the mortality, the relative mortality ratio of mortality to incidence. In other words, what percentage of people with this type of cancer actually die between low-income countries and high-income countries. Obviously, it varies by the type of cancer, but if you just look at the percentage of mortality for most of the cancers between low-income and high-income countries, you notice a major difference there. For cancers like lymphoma, Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, breast cancer, cervical cancer, in the low-income countries, well over half, somewhere between 60 to 80% of those diagnosed with this type of cancer will die from that cancer. Whereas we all know the kinds of strides that we're making in the higher income countries in our country in terms of preventing deaths from these particular problems. Okay, now let's try to draw some general conclusions here. Again, I'm speaking very much in generalities, and I wish we had the time to go into some of the specifics. But basically, a few things that we can look at. One is that in the developed world, the epidemiologic transition has been more bimodal. That is, that infectious diseases were significantly controlled in the Western world before we began noticing a major spike in the chronic diseases, heart disease, and so on. Whereas that whole epidemiologic shift has been compressed much more rapidly in the developing world. It took almost 6 to 7 generations in our world for that transition to occur. It's going to occur in 2 or 3 generations in the developing world. And that results in what is often called a double burden of disease, that the developing countries, the health systems of the developing countries have to deal simultaneously with high levels of communicable infectious diseases like malaria and pneumonia and diarrhea and so on, in addition to all of the problems of chronic heart disease. Now, this transition has a different dynamic, which we're going to talk about in a little bit here. Some of the determinants of this. The usual culprits that I think most of us could guess at, globalization and urbanization are obviously major factors. And you notice that many of these are combined, that one leads to the other, and that it's really hard to separate it. For instance, dietary changes are felt to be a major problem in the developing world toward this transition, which is a reflection of globalization, increasing urbanization and change of diet. decreased infant mortality and increasing lifespan and percentage of the elderly affect the denominator. They basically change the numbers to some extent. Public health advances, even in developing countries, increasing use of tobacco products, a major problem. Environment and climate changes. we're documenting right now, for example, that with global warming, the Anopheles mosquito is being found at a higher and higher elevation, to where malaria now can be found with significant frequency at elevations previously thought to be safe, above 5,000 feet, above 6,000 feet elevation. Just again, a graphic indicator of this that I'm not going to spend too much time on. And again, a little more graphic illustration of some of the determinants of the epidemiologic transitions here. Obviously, it's not quite this clean in reality, with one thing leading to another. But the major point of this is you notice that the end point is an increase in non-communicable diseases or chronic diseases based on all of these. and increasing per capita income is well shown to be a major element of the increase in chronic diseases. In terms of some of the dynamics in developing versus developed countries, the determinants are generally very similar, but there is one, a compressed time of transition that we've already talked about, which in developing countries, having to deal simultaneously with two major types of diseases imposes a tremendous stress on the health system, especially the public health system. Urbanization is occurring in the context of increasing poverty in developing countries and international debt. And again, this makes an effective public health response very, very difficult, as public health workers are dealing with hugely increased populations in the cities and progressively less money. The urban populations have much higher cardiovascular disease risks due to all of the bad things that happen in an urban population that have been, many of us have felt, rural populations have been traditionally somewhat protected against. Rural populations have a much better diet. They grow their own food. It's usually a much more balanced and a much more varied diet. They're obviously have a significant increase in physical activity levels. There's a lot less obesity in rural populations. You move those rural peoples to the city, and they're going to start eating Cheetos and getting all of the problems related to that. Same thing with tobacco consumption. it's markedly increasing in the developing world, even as it decreases in our world. The final issue has to do with, as chronic cardiovascular diseases increase in numbers, one of the biggest problems that we have is the cost of dealing with it. Now, this is a graph that I basically put together myself. It's not based on on rigorous research, but just my own observations of what in a developing country, what care costs. And you notice the major difference in cost of treatment between an infectious disease and a chronic disease. In a chronic disease, even in a developing country, we're looking at, I mean, for heart disease, the first one, the $35 plus is basically for the cost of the meds. If they need a stent, if they need a cardiac cath, you can imagine, well, we all know what the cost of that is, if it's available at all. And on down, cerebrovascular disease. There is basically very little treatment available for that. Rehabilitation is a very costly procedure. Even the management of diabetes is costly. Rheumatic heart disease, $35 might cover the prophylactic antibiotics and the meds necessary to support a failing heart. But ultimately, they need a valve and or two. And that is a very expensive proposition. Okay, just the four, some basic principles of managing this shifting epidemiology. I've already talked about the fact that most developing countries have to deal simultaneously with infectious diseases and emerging chronic diseases. Basically, because the cost of the chronic disease is so expensive, we have to focus on prevention. In a developing country, there are just not the resources that we have in this country to put stents in everybody, to give everybody with a failing heart a new heart valve, to put everybody on anticoagulants, et cetera, et cetera. We have to deal with the underlying determinants, as always. And there is one golden silver lining to this great cloud. And that is that at least in the Western world, we've come to understand what we can do about this. We know effective preventive measures. And these hopefully can be applied in and contextualized to the situation in a developing country to help move them along. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. This is basically a repetition of some that I met. I put it in just to point out that the World Health Organization, about 5 years ago, 2005, published a very informative book detailing the problems of chronic disease in the developing world. These are some of their major conclusions. They actually had 10, and I condensed them to 8. But the bottom line is the World Health Organization says, we can do it. We can do it. Okay. Some of the risk factors that we have to deal with, I think they can be divided into two major categories. Those that we've always dealt with that are basic, the basic backdrop against which all disease occurs in a developing country, such as these, and those modifiable risk factors that are things that we have to deal with specifically related to chronic cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and that kind of thing. There are a large number of countries in development that are beginning to tackle these. And I've just given a few examples here. Multiple countries are beginning to tackle the issue of tobacco control. Even some very poor countries, like Rwanda, has a very strong anti-tobacco measure in place. Now, enforcement sometimes a little bit difficult, but it's still there. I've noticed in the Middle East, where I worked for some time, most of the doctors smoke, as of a few years ago. In my subsequent visits, there are fewer doctors smoking now in the Middle East. That's progress. Increased physical activity is being tackled in some countries. It's not being tackled in countries where it really needs to be, unfortunately, again, like the Middle East or some Asian countries where sweating is considered undignified. There's going to have to be some cultural adaptations to that. Workplace programs in terms of identifying at an earlier stage chronic disease screening programs for other issues are being piloted in many countries. trying to deal with chronic Pulmonary disease, one of the biggest problems, by the way, is not tobacco use, it's indoor air pollution from smoky cook fires inside. This is being tackled in many countries of the world where this is being done. Chronic disease case management is being taught to physicians in countries both in South America and in Africa, as well as self-management skills. And over 90 countries have at least some pilot program in the community-based rehabilitation of stroke victims. So, what have I said? Morbidity and mortality is shifting. It's shifting from infectious to chronic diseases across the world. And within the next 10 years, it will be the major problem across the world. in the areas that we've talked about here. There are major elements involved in this that really cannot be stopped, like globalization, urbanization, population growth, increase in the aging population. We can't really do a whole lot to turn that tide. Poverty and inequities are another major issue. This whole conference is about that, isn't it? We're gonna be hopefully helping with that and seeing some changes in that over the next few years. And there are very effective local strategies that many health systems can implement to prevent chronic disease. Not very expensive. Sometimes they're somewhat people intensive, but in the developing world, that's the one resource that's available, is people. And it may well be our best hope for addressing the issue. Thank you.